Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know what's been really bad in the last 4 or 5 days? Oh, the hitting for the St. Louis Cardinals. But there's two sides to every coin. And the positive, the incredible pitching of the Washington Nationals has had everything to do with that. And so here we are, three games into the NLCS, and we potentially could see a sweep. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I know only once in baseball history and only five times in sports history has a team ever come back to win a series after being down 0-3. And that's where the Cardinals find themselves on this Tuesday morning with Game 4 looming in mere hours. In fact, 15 hours from now, we'll have first pitch at Nationals Park. And we can only hope that it's the same kind of atmosphere. And by we, I just mean general sports fans seeing the way that the fans at Nationals Park who were there on site responded to the first ever appearance by their team in the NLCS. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Good morning to you. If you're just waking up on a Tuesday, oh, there's plenty to talk about. I probably shouldn't be having this much fun at work, but I can't help it. It's part of my DNA. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the homes of their dreams with their help, and they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. It's an eclectic mix of tweets from baseball to Monday Night Football to the NFL and its referees. And then just the point that I was making before the top of the hour about freedom from speech not being freedom from consequences. So check it out on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We also had a trivia question earlier. I did share the answer with you. If you didn't get it, I'll put that on Twitter as well as on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Game 3 last night in D.C. Yes, an incredible atmosphere. And Steven Strasburg more than up to the challenge. If it turns out that the Nationals have to rely on their bullpen, which can be precarious at times, at least that bullpen is well rested. Because Anibal Sanchez goes into the eighth inning with a no-hitter in the opener of this series. Max Scherzer takes a no-hitter into the seventh inning in game two. And now you've got Steven Strasburg, who with 117 pitches, goes a full seven innings in game three and gives up just one run. Now, it wasn't the trouble that Jack Flaherty got into, but he definitely found himself in a bit of a pickle in the seventh inning. And I wondered whether or not he would be able to stay out there and finish what he started. I have starting pitchers tell me you hate to be pulled in the middle of an inning, especially if you made a mess. You want the chance to clean it up. You want the chance to get yourself out of the jam and walk off that mound at the same time as the rest of your teammates do. You don't want the manager to have to come out and get you. And so I wondered whether or not we were going to see Davey Martinez when Strasburg gave up three singles and a run to start the seventh. But his manager was patient. There was some run support out there, so they had a bit of a cushion. He allowed Strasburg to continue pitching.
The 2-2 to Wieters. Swing and a miss. He struck him out on a changeup. A nasty diving changeup gives Strasburg strikeout number 11. And the second out here in the seventh inning. Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss. He got him on a changeup. Steven Strasburg fans, a dozen St. Louis Cardinals over seven innings. How about that, Steven Strasburg? What a performance.
Dave Jagler on the Nationals radio network. Amazing moment. As you can imagine, Nationals Park was even more raucous after that. And I think they should be able to take some credit for the atmosphere that not only spurred on Strasburg and gave him that little extra energy and adrenaline to push through at 116 and 17 pitches, but also to make things really difficult for the Cardinals. And not just for the Cardinals, but actually for the Nationals defensively as well. I know if you saw it, there was a juncture in the game, at least one, where they had to communicate via hand signals to kind of to get everybody in the right defensive positions because it was so loud inside the stadium that nobody could hear each other, which again is an amazing credit to the fans who have showed up in droves. And this was their first opportunity as well. Not just the first time for the Nationals as a team in the NLCS, but the first chance for the Nationals fans to be able to welcome their team home since game five against the Dodgers, right? So they hadn't seen this team since game four and had not seen Howie Kendrick since the time at which he was able to hit that grand slam in the extra innings of game five in Los Angeles. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So Strasburg follows suit, allows just that single run in seven innings, 12 strikeouts, no walks, and these starting pitchers continue to raise the bar for one another and, of course, for their manager for the clubhouse, Davey Martinez.
Even though Scherzer and Strasburg are hard and Sanchez, they watch videos, they watch, and then they go out and they compete. You know, they compete every day, and they compete amongst themselves. And like I said, it's a lot of fun.
Max Scherzer got a lot of airtime on the broadcast. It was kind of funny. You know, he's a little bit manic, and he can also be kind of annoying when he's not pitching. He's strutting around. He's talking a lot and, you know, just very animated. I thought it was fun to see him because a lot of times when we see starting pitchers, it's when they are locked in with the game face, right? It's when you get the death stare, the eyes of Adam Gase, to borrow, you know, our favorite pair of eyes in sports. And so to see Scherzer in a completely different mode, and my favorite pitcher of all time, it was Pedro Martinez, and he would be the same. I mean, he was a ham on days when he wasn't pitching. He had props in the dugout with him. He had friends in the dugout with him. He was a chatterbox when he was in the dugout when he wasn't pitching. So I always enjoy seeing pitchers when they're out of that game face mode and they're kind of more relaxed. Howie Kendrick, yet again, coming through with some massive hits. Three doubles in his four at-bats with three RBI. This has been a postseason to remember for the 36-year-old Kendrick, even if he doesn't get another hit and somehow the Nationals don't make the World Series. Again, highly unlikely, though nothing is impossible. And how about 35-year-old Ryan Zimmerman? 2-for-4 with a couple of RBI as well. The bullpen has been really good, though not much pressure on the bullpen, but two perfect innings for the Nationals pen on Monday night. And here they sit with a 3-0 lead. And I just love it. Every time we hear from Martinez, what does he talk about? The fact that they started out the season 19-31 and had to fight and scratch and claw just to get to the postseason.
We've been playing playoff games since then. You know, we had to play really good to come back and do the things we've done. And now, you know, that September, they believed that they can do this. And they're going out there and they're not taking anything for granted. And they're playing really hard and they're playing to win one game every day.
That is kind of how you have to handle it. You don't have a choice. You don't have the luxury of looking ahead. You don't have the luxury of big picture perspective when you put yourself in a 19-31 hole and aren't sure if you're going to get to 500, much less the postseason. So they've been in playoff mode for a long time. And in a game five, I don't think that benefits them more than it does the Dodgers. But the Dodgers hadn't played any type of compelling baseball with a sense of urgency for months. Meanwhile, the Cardinals had been scoreboard watching and tracking innings and pitches and outs and games. And they were in that mode where you take nothing for granted. And every day you feel like you're playing for your October lives. As for the Cardinals, this is rough. I mean, they won the NL Central. They obviously put the 10 runs on the board in that first inning of game five against the Braves. They've been a really amazing story as well. But right now, they're getting steamrolled by the Nationals pitchers and have not yet led in three games of this series.
We got to play with the lead. We got to get the lead at some point in the series. I mean, you know, it's going to be hard to win a game. You can't get a lead. So we got to figure out a way to create some offense early in the game and be able to hold it there.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Schilt makes a point. How about we get a lead? You can't win any of these games if you never have the upper hand. But they have not scored first and have not led in any of these three games.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
A-Rod shotgun takes the snap. Lots of time. Looking around. Scrambles right. Steps up. Penalty marker down. Throws left side of the end zone. Wide of the mark. I got a feeling they're going to get holding called here in the offensive backfield. Rodgers went down on that play after he let the ball go.
Oh, if it's holding, we're going to move from chip shot to
illegal
not so
use
much
of hands,
chip
hands
shot.
Hands to the face. Defense.
Yes.
Five-yard penalty from the previous spot. First down, Green Bay.
36-year-old Mason Crosby will try a 23-yard field goal to give Green Bay the win. The long snap is there. Ball put down. The right-footed kick is away and good! Green Bay has their first lead of the game. Crosby runs to the side. It will do the Lambeau leap. Zeros on the clock. Fireworks shoot. The Packers have won. 23-22 in a thriller in Lambeau.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I agree with Kevin Harlan on Westwood One. It was a thriller at Lambeau Field. However, it was also marred by some controversy. It's unfortunate that this is the look that the NFL keeps giving us in the first 6 weeks of this regular season. And it doesn't mean it can't stabilize. We've seen that in the past. But the first 6 weeks of this regular season, what we're getting are flags upon flags upon flags upon flags. It's like the officials are over-analyzing, over-officiating, as though they're feeling the pressure and they're wanting to get everything completely right. And now they're starting to err and to see things where things are not. So the two calls that people are talking about on this Tuesday morning, both against Trey Flowers, first time in his career that Flowers has ever been flagged for illegal hands to the face. In neither case were there illegal hands to the face. And on slow-mo, we could see that he did not get the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if the officials were looking for that specifically. And they came at very critical moments, third downs in the fourth quarter. So the NFL now is hearing the uproar and will again feel this criticism and the backlash. Will it cause them to then tell the officials, hey, just breathe? Instead of blowing the whistle, breathe. Because certainly you've got current players, former players, a lot of fans, obviously, who are watching what's happening in the first 6 weeks of the season and thinking, like, we can't go 5 seconds without a flag. And it's not only annoying, but it definitely does mar the experience. So I hate that for what was supposed to be a rivalry game on national TV that had plenty of twists and turns, really amazing displays on both sides. And it turned out to be a one-point game. And so you hate that it's, at least I hate, I won't speak for you, I hate that it's the officiating, that it's getting all of the conversation, the debate, the talk this morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So the first call that you heard there was with Wayne Larrivee on the Packers Radio Network. It was the second time that Flowers got flagged for illegal use of the hands. And it was on the 16-yard line in the final 2 minutes, and it extended a drive. Now, could Mason Crosby have made a game-winning, or at that point it would have been a go-ahead field goal from, I don't know, 32 yards? Sure. But what it did was unequivocally allow the Packers to run the clock all the way down with a fresh set of downs so that he could kick the field goal with no time remaining on the clock. So as opposed to giving the Lions the ball back with, say, 90 seconds and seeing if they can then go for a field goal, it allows the Packers to run out the clock. So that was the second flag. The flag earlier in the fourth quarter, whew, I mean, this one was brutal. It was also on a third down at midfield after Aaron Rodgers has been sacked. And so the flag negates a sack, negates what would have been a punt forced by the Packers. And it allows their drive to continue. Three plays later, Alan Lazard catches this perfectly dropped pass from Aaron Rodgers onto the goal line for what was a touchdown. So in saying all of that, I recognize that this is a bad look for the NFL and that those flags definitely affected the flow of the game. But I am very consistent in this, and I'm about to give you the reasons why the Lions lost. That is not why the Lions lost. In fact, if you want to look at mistakes, I don't know, why not go back to the first half where the Lions lined up with 12 men on the field as the Packers are about to kick a field goal. Three-point kick. They get flagged for 12 men on the field, and what do? Hand Aaron Rodgers a fresh set of downs inside the 8-yard line and a touchdown. Okay, so if you're going to tell me the referees handed the Packers a touchdown, I mean, what they did was extend a drive. They're not, the referees are not the ones who threw that ball to Alan Lazard. Anyway, if you're going to tell me that the referees gave the Packers a touchdown, well, the Lions gave the Packers a touchdown when they lined up with 12 men on the field on what should have been a field goal. So there were plenty of mistakes. Here's the most egregious missed opportunity for the Lions. Settling for 5 field goals and only getting into the end zone once. The Packers tried to give this game to Detroit. Tried. 3 turnovers, a muffed punt. There was an interception off the face mask of Darius Shepherd. Boy, Aaron Jones and Darius Shepherd, they're joining me in the hole in the earth that just swallowed me up. Opened up, swallowed me up. So those guys, I mean, they made mistakes that put the Packers in really bad positions. And yet somehow the Lions managed to squander those opportunities. So instead of getting into the end zone, they had a 10-0 lead after the first quarter, never got into the end zone again. Field goal after field goal after field goal. And so the Lions lose by a point. And at least it's easy for me to spot how many missed opportunities they had, how they squandered this opportunity to win in Green Bay. But that's not what most people are talking about. At least Matt Stafford agrees that they left way too many points on the field.
We made some big plays on offense. We just didn't put the ball in the end zone. And can't do that, you know, on the road against a good team. And, you know, they made the plays at the end of the game to beat us.
So for the Lions, as much as it sucks that they continue to fall short in fourth quarters, so the season opener against the Cardinals, that shouldn't be a tie. That should have been a win. They had the Cardinals on the ropes and didn't slam the door. The game against the Chiefs, they give up this incredible 2-minute drill to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and they lose that game when they played well enough to win. They just did everything but win. Same thing now against the Packers. I actually thought the way they started, the flea flicker for 66 yards, the Marvin Hall bomb from Matthew Stafford that went 58 yards. I mean, they were playing well enough to win. They were putting themselves in position. They just didn't take advantage. However, I do think they're closer. I feel like you can see the progress under Matt Patricia, though at this point, they don't yet have the results. Because you are what your record says you are. And they have fallen out of 2-2-1 in the basement of the NFC North. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Or if you want to check out our podcast after the show, it was really good to talk to Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. He was with us from Lambeau when he got done with his post-game responsibilities. He was in the locker room. He talked to players, and he got their reaction. It was definitely a painful loss for the Lions. And yet there is a silver lining. So you can check that out on our podcast after the fact. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Your Touchdown Tuesday candidates coming up.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 minute to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! touchdown! Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Summers helping into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The New York Jets.
Darnold, play action, drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it at the 50, at the 40. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. 10, 5. Anderson, 92 yards, and the Jets have widened their lead.
The Houston Texans.
Second and goal at the one. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson fakes the give, steps out to his left. Watson wants to run, and he dives to the goal line. He's in! Deshaun Watson twisting his way into the end zone to grab the lead for Houston.
The Minnesota Vikings.
High formation, play action, Kirk straight drop, pats it, fires, caught Diggs, back in the end zone, touchdown! Stephon Diggs just hit the touchdown trifecta.
The Green Bay Packers.
Three receivers left, Graham to the right, in motion, Kumro to the right side, Rodgers shotgun, Jones to his right, snap, Rodgers gets a block, throws the left sidelines, going to the end zone, over the shoulder, catch! Is it a touchdown?
Yes, it is!
It is. Of all people, touchdown, Green Bay, 35-yard strike.
Crazy thing about Alan Lazard, and you hear Wayne Larrivee make reference to it on the Packers radio network, he had one catch all year. One catch. It's an undrafted free agent wide receiver stepping into duty for the Packers, notably because of their injuries, but Geronimo Allison being out after a hard hit and ending up in concussion protocol. It's a next man up type of situation for a lot of teams at this point in the season. So on the Packers radio network, do you choose Alan Lazard's first career touchdown at the goal line, this teardrop pass right into his arms after Rodgers and his receivers had been plagued by a bunch of drops on Monday Night Football? That's one of your choices for our TD of the week. Also, NFC North Stephon Diggs, the touchdown trifecta, as Paul Allen calls it, his third score in the Vikings' explosive offensive game against the Eagles. Or Deshaun Watson, Texans overcoming a bunch of turnovers and miscues to win their game against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Mark Vandermeer with the call. And finally, welcome back, Sam Darnold. Robbie Anderson was a second play or second drive for the Jets over the top behind the defense. Robbie is gone. And so you've got four options, lots of great touchdowns and scoring on the NFL gridiron this week. But those are the four we've chosen for Touchdown Tuesday. So the poll is up on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my Twitter. And then you can also find it on our Facebook page with photos. Sunday, we're talking about week 7. I feel like Allen Iverson. We're talking about practice. Practice. So Sunday, week 7, the NFL on CBS is at Lambeau Field. Oh, for you Lions fans, you probably want to plug your ears and go la 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 la. The Packers will once again be home hosting the Raiders, who are above 500. Plus, we've got a key AFC South clash between Houston and Indianapolis. It all begins with JB and the guys getting you ready for all the action on the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on CBS.
We're talking about practice.
Yes, exactly, AI. We talking about week 7. Week 7. I'm up here busting my ass, and we're talking about practice. That's so iconic. By the way, if you missed our walk down memory lane from earlier in the show, do you know what happened 4 years ago on Monday? See if you can remember where you were, what you were doing, how you were feeling, how we took calls for days about this moment. Joey Bats, ALDS, Game 5. It was the Blue Jays, and it was the Rangers.
The 1-1 pitch. Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir. There she goes. Blue Jays 6, Rangers 3.
Jose Bautista is unbelievable.
On the Blue Jays radio network, the Fan 590, the flagship, it wasn't so much the Joey Bautista home run. It was the bat. Many people called it a bat flip. It was the bat chuck. That was what I labeled it from the ALDS. And, of course, Rougui Odor was still carrying that grudge for the Rangers the following season when he had the chance to deliver a punch. What did Bautista say after the fact? Such a punk move. He says, oh, apparently it takes a bigger man than him to knock me down. If I'm not mistaken, it was something along those lines. Oh, it's so good. So juicy. Joey Bats and the Bat Chuck. That was 4 years ago, October 14th, 2015. I cannot believe how time flies, yowzers. And so we put the photos up and also the video up on our show Twitter after our CBS and our Facebook page as well. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So I haven't quite decided what I will write about my weekly NFL column, but I have a couple of really good ideas. I think I will not write about the Seahawks and the Browns. I've included the Browns in, I think, two of my last three columns, not just about the Browns, but in writing about other topics. So how long it takes to build a winning culture. As a matter of fact, I included the Lions in last week's column as I was talking about building a culture, changing a culture, learning how to win, starting fresh, all of that. And both the Browns or Lions and Browns and Lions are in various phases of that. And certainly the Lions have been one of those teams that is kind of knocking on the door and just can't quite get through that doorway yet, but I can see the progress under Matt Patricia in a year and a half. I believe there's been progress with the Browns as well. Certainly, John Dorsey has gone out of his way to bring in different talent, to spend the money on free agents, to draft well after stockpiling draft picks. And while it remains to be seen whether or not Freddie Kitchens is in for the long haul and is able to see this project through, we know sometimes the ownership there in Cleveland does not have great patience. That's kind of what my column was advocating, patience in a rebuilding project. Certainly what we've seen from the Browns, what the Browns themselves has put out there on the field in these first 6 weeks, they're not thrilled with. They're 0-3 at home, which has been, I think, a stunning development. Hugh Jackson, their former coach, so popular in Cleveland, he was a guest on Tiki and Tierney Monday here on CBS Sports Radio, and they asked him about the early struggles of Baker Mayfield.
I still think the guy is a tremendous player. Sometimes you can just get off a little bit, and I would say go back to your fundamentals, go back to the things that the real true and tried and grit things that got you to where you are, and you'll get this thing turned back around really quickly.
You can hear the entire interview with Hugh Jackson on CBSSportsRadio.com. And so, two things can be true. Baker Mayfield can still be a very talented quarterback and yet can really be struggling. And it's kind of a dovetail effect now. They're in a bit of a spiral. I mean, he's at times not getting help from his receivers. They're dropping balls. We've also seen the offensive line pretty porous at times. There have been turnovers, but Baker bears responsibility as well. Rushing throws, making ill-advised throws, holding onto the ball too long, always scrambling to his right. I mean, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. Penalties, lack of discipline at times in the worst possible situations. And then Freddie Kitchens bears some responsibility too. And so it's never on one guy, but of course, quarterbacks get far too much of the credit. And they also absorb far too much of the blame when things do not go well. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Hugh Jackson was asked by Tiki and Tierney whether or not he roots for the Browns after they fired him.
I do, because there's a lot of players there that I have personal relationships with. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted, my whole goal going to Cleveland was to turn the organization around and get it to winning. And I hope that that happens for them because I think their fans deserve that.
What was the final record? Well, in the two seasons, it was 1-31. Ouch. Again, jury's still out on Freddie Kitchens. It's a tough transition when you go to from coordinator to NFL head coach, but he's never been a head coach at any level. And that's a lot to learn on the job. It's a humongous learning curve. Doesn't mean he can't do it. Just means it's a steep mountain. And now the Browns have made it even steeper because of their start. However, it's only week 6. A lot can happen. A lot can and will happen between now and the end of the season. All is not lost. Especially not if you're in the NFC East, where it feels like no one really wants to win the division. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Okay, so more quarterback news here. The Panthers have a let it be known, kind of. It's more sources from the Panthers. So not an official team statement. But Cam Newton's foot injury is healing well. I'm confident this is not frostbite because of the wrong footwear in a cryo chamber. I'm really confident of that. I could say that with much confidence, even without sources. So Cam Newton, anytime I talk about feet now, that's what I think about Antonio Brown. Cam Newton's foot injury is healing up well. And he is expected to practice following the team's bye this week. So by week 8, could we have a tough decision for Ron Rivera? We might. Now, it could take Cam longer than that to be cleared, to be ready to play football, to be able to push off on the foot, to be as explosive as, I mean, even as 80% of Cam Newton. But then Ron Rivera has to decide which quarterback should start. And it's not as easy as saying Cam Newton's the better quarterback when he's healthy. How do you pull a QB when the offense looks different, when the team is playing so well? Yeah, in a vacuum, Cam Newton's the better quarterback for sure. But here's Kyle Allen as an undrafted free agent that's got the team on a winning streak for his part. Now, the defense has played a major part of that. I don't think you could look at the product in London against the Buccaneers and say, oh, yeah, that was the offense. No, it wasn't. Carolina produced, what is that, 7 turnovers in that game and also had 7 sacks. That's not the offense. That's not Kyle Allen. He's not Gerald McCoy. And so this is a team effort here. But Ron Rivera still will have to face the media and make that decision. So we will wait to see. But coming back from that Liz Frank injury, Cam Newton is, he's been on the shelf now for weeks. And we haven't heard a whole lot from him either. Also, can I just tell you this as we wrap up? Sources are important for something like that. Although I feel like that word is way overused on the internet. And some people on the internet just use sources so that they can credit someone else instead of taking credit for something that they just want to put out there on the internet. I saw this headline, and I'm not going to tell you where, but I spotted this on the web on Monday afternoon, and I quote, sources, rain could alter NLCS, ALCS schedules. Sources? You need sources to know that rain could change a baseball series? Duh. Do we really need a source for that? And so cryptic, too. What was your source? Weather.com? Stop it. Oh, my gosh. Sources. Like it's such clickbait. Like the source makes the rain more ominous. Oh, my gosh. We have jumped the shark on the internet, especially on Twitter. We're back tonight after the Championship Series doubleheader. Join us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.